Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back to school shopping done now at amazon.com/back to school and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.
Straight out of Austin, Texas, it's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, episode 102, presented by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles, and it's a special time of summer. Guess who's going back to Omaha, baby?
That'd be your Texas Longhorns, trip number 36. I mean, no other team's been more than 25. This will be their record-extending 36. That's amazing.
How many have you been to, Mr. Bowles?
Oh, 36 of them. I don't know.
Starting in 1949?
Yeah.
Before you were born?
My first one was 1975, and I haven't counted them up this week. But
So they won in 75, yeah, and then
won in 83, and then two Augies, and what, two and five?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I went to all of those, and
then you went to. They went before 2000. Didn't they go in 2000?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just, you know, I miss Rosenblatt. I love that stadium.
Mm-hmm.
It's sitting by the highway, and the wind would blow out the left, and we'd do interviews on the roof of the stadium. It was old school, but you know, they got a modern stadium, Progress, and all that, so it's just an exciting time, and just love some college baseball.
Yeah, it's a wonderful time of the year, and I like it because there's not a lot going on now.
The French Open's over. Wimbledon hadn't started.
Justify won the triple crown.
NBA playoffs are over. Who won this year?
Who won the NBA?
Who won this?
Kevin Durant won.
Oh, did he? Okay, yeah. Again.
So all of that stuff's not happening.
Yeah,
now.
It's got the center stage all to itself.
The training camp hasn't really started. They've got the mini camps that no one cares about. So it's a good time for college baseball to take it front and center. And the Texas Longhorns got in. They took care of a very good Tennessee Tech team.
You can say that again.
Shut down a great offense over the last couple of games, and now they meet Arkansas at 1 o'clock on Sunday at TD Ameritrade. It's an old school rivalry, you know, but it's no more for football, of course, Southwest Conference. But I just think it's going to be fun to see the Longhorns back on that national stage. It's been a minute.
They got the worst end of the bracket, too.
Of course they
Florida's
did.
Florida's top-ranked. Mm-hmm. Arkansas seeded fifth. And Texas Tech, what are they, ninth or something?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Texas, you hate to say Texas is a Cinderella, but, you know, there's no Coastal Carolina there, which won it 2 years ago. Tennessee Tech would have been the darlings of Omaha. No Kent State, Stony Point, Fresno State.
Cal Irvine.
You know, there really isn't. So I don't know if anyone really fits that image. Mississippi State, proud program. I don't know. It'll be interesting. It's always interesting to see who the crowds get behind.
And you know what? And when you want the information, that's why you come to On Second Thought.
Yeah.
Because guess who we're going to have?
Who are we going to have?
We got David Pierce once again, Texas baseball coach, leading the Horns to the College World Series in just his second season. And then we're going to top it off with another broadcasting legend. The voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way, is going to join us.
That's going to be fun.
My former radio partner in crime, Craig Way. So Craig Way is a walking encyclopedia, and I know a lot of you have heard him on the radio. We'll ask him about his favorite Omaha stories. He has quite a few. And we'll get him to give his take on this team compared to the other ones that he's called. Craig Way. In the modern era of Texas athletics, is called the greatest moments.
Mm-hmm.
He called Vince Young scoring. He called both Final Fours, men and women, in 03.
Right.
And he's called the two College World Series under Augie.
Hey, if it's a big game, you know Craig Way is going to be there. So Hey, just to back up just a second, Washington's going to be the Cinderella.
Oh, yeah.
Their first ever trip.
That's fun. Hall.
And it's a little bit of a shame. They beat Fullerton. So Augie could have had two teams there in Texas and Fullerton. That would have been kind of sweet because they'd be in the opposite ends of the bracket. It would have been nice to see them in the championship.
And don't you know ESPN was hoping that they could package that together.
Oh,
that's such an easy feature for a rain delay.
That would have been a lot of fun, but it's going to be fun regardless, and I can't wait to talk about it.
I can't either. Let's get straight to our first guest. Here's David Pierce, head Texas baseball coach on Second Thought. Joining us via phone in the dungeon, he is a friend of the podcast.
He's a regular.
Here's the one thing I know about baseball people. They're pretty superstitious.
Are they?
So remember when Texas won, when they clinched the World Series berth, we mentioned to David Pierce, probably want to do the podcast again. You don't want to mess this up. So he's back. What's up, Coach?
Creature of habit, and yeah, I pay attention to some of that stuff. That was good. Just finished workout, solid workout, and some meetings. So getting ready to go to Omaha.
As well you should. And you mentioned superstitions. Were you superstitious as a ball player, and are you as a coach?
Well, first of all, you mentioned superstition.
That's true. That's true.
I don't know if it's – some call it superstition. Some call it routine. Kind of like to think maybe a little bit of both, but
right,
it's just a comfort. It's a comfort. When I played, yeah, I did a lot of things the same way over and over.
Mm-hmm.
More about what I did in my own deck circle to in the box, and you know, sometimes what I wore.
It
was a comfort. It was like that's why I had a good day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start. Maybe you really don't believe it, but maybe it's really not true, but you really believe it. So
you don't want to tempt fate, right?
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
They were talking this week about Mark Payton's undershirt, said, and they were saying that Mark Payton had bequeathed it to Casey Clemens, and mm-hmm. Casey gave it to Cody. And Cody was saying, Coach, that you know he gave it to Ryan Reynolds, and he got a big hit, and then he took it off mid-game, gave it to Tate Shaw, and he got another hit. So are you getting this shirt?
I did not know that, I didn't know that, but I love it.
You better get it reproduced or washed several times to get some duplicates, I think. Don't you think?
Well, that's theirs, you know, and that's the thing, too. You have to create it, and it happens, and then, you know, you don't force it. It's like the game. When you start forcing it,
yeah,
it kind of loses its magic.
Right.
So you let it happen.
Well, was there one superstition you had, though? You mentioned on-deck circle and at-bat. What was the kind of the strangest one that you had that you did over and over and over as a player?
I don't really know if it was strange, but do you guys remember Kent Herbeck?
Oh, yeah. Minnesota Twins.
Minnesota Twins. Well, he wouldn't stop pulling his gloves. And, you know, he had this superstitious routine between every pitch. And I kind of did the same thing, but not quite to the level that he did it. I would literally take the we used to not really have a – we had a donut, a weighted bat donut, but mm-hmm. we had this kind of this steel rod, and it was really heavy, and I would circle it over my head. I would stretch with it, and I would swing it full-time three times, and then I'd put my donut on my bat, swing it three times, and then I would hit a knee.
But he wasn't superstitious.
Oh, my God.
No, not at all. Well, it was routine.
There you go.
And then I went to home plate. I went to home plate, and I kind of had the same little wiggle with my bat. And in between pitches, I pulled my gloves. And, yeah, it was kind of silly, but I can still remember the routine from when I played. Gosh. 30, 35, I guess about 30 years now.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, and baseball's always been like that. Football's kind of starting to catch up. You know, Miami has the championship belt. But if you just look at this year's baseball tournament, Duke guy gets a home run, and they have this big white batting hard hat
right.
that they put on him because Conine's kid hit a couple of bombs, and there's a banana floating around Mississippi State, and – And, you know.
Well, Tennessee Tech had the WWF belt.
Yes, they did. That's exactly right. They did. And this T-shirt thing, you know, if it works,
if it works.
You got Deadpool driving in runs, move him to the nine hole, and all of a sudden,
yeah,
he is producing. Coach, how important is that when you have the players that, you know, that are not, he's not Cody Clemons. And I covered a Texas team that won with a third baseman by the name of David Morole, who became the most outstanding player, hit 240 that year, hits two bombs in Omaha. So how important is it when those that those other guys step up at just the right time of the season?
Drew Stubbs walked out of my office about 15 minutes ago, and we just talked about David Morole.
That's my guy.
And when you get to Omaha, there's so many things that happen that it truly goes to expect the unexpected. And David Morole was the unexpected in 2005. And when you look at Dustin Ruckte for us in 2003,
mm-hmm.
and he was a deep catcher that we actually eliminated. Texas eliminated Rice in 02, and then in 03 we eliminated them, and Justin couldn't hit a sack full of balls throughout the course of the year, but he was a defensive catcher. And we were in Reno in the weight room, and he says, "Coach, I'm hitting 314. Justin, it's okay." It's like when I play golf, and if I have hit par, par, bogey, par, okay, when is it going to happen to me? I know I'm fixing to just employed here. And so I'm waiting on the mess to take over. Well, we're in Omaha, and Ruckte was the same as Morole. He wore out Justin Simmons, right center field gap, and then they bring in J.P. Howell, and he hits it in the left center field gap. He looked like the best hitter in college baseball, and he wasn't very good offensively, but he was great in that moment of truth when we needed him. And so Ryan Reynolds could be a guy, Tate Shaw, Mason Hibler. I mean, there's so many guys that have been just okay recently, but just got one offensive productive run. If it were a drag bunt, Tate gets the drag bunt the other day, scored from second on the pop-up that was missed in the infield. You got to get to first base, and he created something. So if they can continue just to not try to force it and just trying to find ways to help, you're going to find that one unexpected hero throughout this run.
Well, and you mentioned Tate Shaw, and what David didn't say is they had the hit and run before he scored and stayed out of the double play. That would have erased him, and then they scored on the error. So, you know as well as we do, it's all about the little things, isn't it?
Oh, that's how we can survive. We're not very good unless we do them. And,
right.
And so we constantly talk about. And, we talk about the ballpark at Ameritrade. For us, we probably have opportunities as much as anyone, and I don't know if we will, or we go up there and bang it out, or we go cold. But our goal and philosophy is, hey, let's take what the defense gives us. Let's have the ability to score multiple ways. We've hit close to 60 home runs, so right at it, but we've got a high number of drag bunt hits and sack bunts. We'll utilize the hit when it's right. So sometimes you got to create it, and then we get a big blow. So that, to me, is just a big piece of how we operate our offense, is having the ability to score in multiple ways. And no players knowing, all right, the wind's blowing in today, well, we're probably going to be a little bit more action-oriented. And so it also pertains to, what does that pitcher allow you to do? If the guy's quick to the plate, you're not going to steal a lot of it. So you're going to have to create some offense.
Well, Debbie, you're hitting 272, which is the lowest of the eight teams, but there aren't that many teams. I think there's only two or three hitting over 300 as a team. Speaking as someone, I covered Texas baseball from 03 to 06, so that was all old Rosenblatt Stadium. I've never been to the Ameritrade Stadium. Does it play to your strengths, dimension-wise, that park? How similar is it to the Dish?
I'll be honest with you. My last time in Omaha was 08, and I was also at Rosenblatt. Mm-hmm. So I have not been to Ameritrade. I really kind of refused until we took another team there. So I'm getting familiar with it. I know the one thing that happened at the same time. When they left Rosenblatt, they changed the ball. Was still a low seam ball, mm-hmm. and they flipped the field where the wind's going to blow in. So it wasn't just Ameritrade. All of this happened at one time, and we went 2 or 3 years with just very boring pitching and defense. Guys throwing 88 middle in, and guys are just flying out to left field. And mm-hmm. it's like, this isn't baseball. So they did a great job of really fixing that as quick as possible with improving the core and flattening the seams on the ball. So I think it's playing much more fair than ever before. And I think if a player really drives a ball, he's got a chance to, you know, to be rewarded for that. But I'm telling you, there's years there that it needed the change, and the NCAA did a great job of doing that.
Yeah, it really did. I remember, I guess first time I was there was maybe 11, and then nothing got out of there, nothing. I mean, you'd see balls just stroked, and it wouldn't get out of the park. But in 14, you could see it, and it's continued to change. So I do think it's a better representation of the game. I couldn't agree with you.
Yeah, there. I agree.
And you're playing Arkansas. You're familiar with them. You played them twice in mid-March. Your starting pitchers then were Bo Ridgeway and Nico O'Donnell, who, needless to say, haven't figured in the postseason very much. So you take anything from that mid-March series where y'all lost two by decisive margins, David?
Well, Arkansas has been one of the best teams in the country and been in the top five the entire year. So from top to bottom, their lineup's very good. They've hit 9 home runs. But this is interesting. They're 35-4 at home. What you just described are Tuesday, Wednesday, midweek games back-to-back at their place. We're 31-8 at home. We're 9-11. So they're 6-13 on the road. We've both played very good people on the road. They're 3-2 in a neutral park, and we're 1-2. So that home field advantage for both of us is out the window.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take that. All right, these are two of eight teams that are playing for a national championship. I think they're really good on the mound, and I think defensively they're solid. I definitely believe that 1-9 can hit, but I like the thought that we have played them because we have film, not only film of them playing maybe an SEC opponent, but film of our guys and how they attacked us and when they were successful, why, and when they weren't, why. So it does help, and that's a big reason why you build that schedule like that, where you can be in those environments, you build some calluses, you've got to get a lot better if you're going to be one of the elite teams in baseball. And so we've used that as an advantage for us.
I agree with you, and you're meeting another rival. Y'all dispatched the Aggies in the regional. Tennessee Tech fast became a nice rival with some of the things going on in the Super Region. Now you catch Arkansas, who I think, even though they've been in the SEC 20 years, they still think Texas is their number one rival. So what kind of factor will that be in this game?
I think, first of all, I need to educate our team that they used to be in the Southwest Conference.
It's been a minute.
Because I don't know if half of our players even realize Arkansas used to be in our conference, and it was very heated.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, that's something that I'm going to add to the list. We've talked about playing a very quality team in Arkansas, but I bet you half of our guys don't. Probably more than half of our guys don't know that they were in the same conference with Texas.
You don't think Mateo knows?
Years ago.
You don't think Mateo Bochy knows?
Come on now. You know the answer to that one.
You know, David, a lot of these guys were born as the Southwest Conference was disbanded.
Yeah.
The Big 12 comes along in the mid-90s. That's when these kids were born,
right.
A lot of them. So,
right.
Yeah, I bet their parents know, but they don't.
All of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All except maybe Sawyer and McGuire, they're yeah. 28 years old. But.
Seems like it sometimes.
Oh my God! So you talk about you told us over the weekend that in seventh inning of game two, tight game, you're kind of tugging on Augie Garrido's jersey that's hanging in the dugout. Do you think his presence was there? And the running commentary on Twitter was he held that would-be grand slam in the park late in the game, and he allowed Cody's to go out earlier in the game. How much presence of Augie did you feel?
You think he maybe kind of blew that back in, huh?
Yes, I think so.
He might have.
Well, first of all, he's been such a special part of this program and this university, and unfortunately, when he passed, it affected a lot of people here. And the thing that I think the players have done a wonderful job of handling it and not making it bigger than a piece of us. Just like I think there's different support staff that are a piece of us, different guest speakers that we've had that are a piece of us. We have a Navy SEAL that's worked with us in September that is a piece of us, but I think that's where Augie is. I think he's a piece. His presence is definitely felt, but I know Augie, and I knew Augie really well, and I think he would be disappointed if we made this team and this trip to Omaha strictly about him. And so we like it is with how we've created this he's created this presence, and we've accepted that. And our kids have handled it really well. Our support and our staff has handled it really well. And it's been very natural. It hasn't been something that's been forced, which I think is the way it's supposed to be. And it's been wonderful to know that Coach has been a part of us. And I can admit, in game three, in the seventh inning, I threw a little rub on there. Coach, show me a little of that. Just give us a little of that magic right here. And he did.
It's again, it's not superstitions. It's just, you know, a comfort zone.
It's baseball, dog.
Like you said. And David, finally, it's about 2 years since you came to Austin, and a lot of people are really surprised. In the second year, you have them back in Omaha, and but you came in, and I have a feeling in your mind you don't think you're ahead of schedule, do you?
Well, you just never really know. You know what your vision is, and you know what your plan is. And I can definitely understand the way that hiring went down and the length of time and, you know, all the big names and all. And I understand that people have doubt and question, but we never really worried about that. We never really got into that. It was just, it's time to get busy, and it's time to put this together. But you're right. It's just, we never looked at it as a timetable of, all right, well, in 3 years when we get our players, or in 4 years. When we went to Sam Houston State, we were picked sixth, I believe. Still there?
Right, yeah. Right.
We were picked sixth in the league, and we won the league 3 years in a row and advanced in the regionals. When we went to Tulane, that was a beat-up, scarred team that had no confidence. We never looked at it and said, well, when we get our players, we're going to be good. So I've never put a timetable on it. I just thought, you know, if we can start putting these pieces together and guys start building confidence in themselves and believing in themselves and then believing in each other, I knew my coaching staff would do a great job of development. And they have. And now it's just such a very positive culture with our group. So when you get a team and you feel like, when you speak to them and you're telling them, this is how I want you to do something, and you know they're all in, you know you got a chance. And that's just a tribute to our coaches and a tribute to the players that just want to be great and have become an elite program, elite team this year.
And you always say sometimes you win ugly, you're not always pretty, but you guys aren't going up there on a sightseeing trip, are you?
No, we're not. There's a standard here. The one thing that I think is, you know, we have a lot of guys in our locker room that's never been to Omaha.
Right.
Josh Stoyer went in 2014. I went, this will be my fifth time, my first time as coach, and Drew Bishop, and that's about it. And so you want to give them as much information about we're not going up to participate, but do soak it in. Enjoy it, but understand we're here. So a lot of times you see that team, you can talk about Texas in 04 when they were the best team in the country all year and didn't win in Omaha. So when they returned in 05, the mission of we're not only going back, we're going to win it.
Right.
And that's the thing that we have to – that's the thing I'm trying to educate the team on right now. Can you overcome that giddy of being here and understand that we're coming to win? Because you got teams like Florida, defending champion. They've been there. They know how to do it. You got teams like Oregon State that, you know,
right,
lost LSU and had lost six games going into that two-game skid. So they have some history. Well, we have to fast-forward our kids' minds and to make them understand that we've played and been exposed now more than any team in the country since the day we started a Fall World Series. So our kids are used to playing under national exposure,
mm-hmm,
high volume of media,
right,
and playing on TV. But we have to use that as a strength and a teaching tool for us.
Well, Coach, man, it's going to be a great time up in Omaha. Texas, Arkansas, 1 o'clock Sunday, TD Ameritrade. It's on either ESPN, ESPN2, or the Ocho. We don't know which. Find it yourself. We can't wait, Coach. Good luck to you, and we will see. I know Kirk and Danny will see you up there, and I'll see you when you get back, bro.
Sounds great. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, and appreciate the fan base. Everybody's been so supportive, and hook 'em horns.
Safe travels and good luck, David.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys.
Duck, I get the feeling that David Pierce is a little excited.
He's a little stoked
about
he?
What's coming up this weekend.
Yeah, but he's not superstitious.
He's
just
not.
A creature of habit.
He's
I
a
like
creature
it.
Of habit, but you kind of get the sense that he's ready for this. And he gave a best quote ever. Everybody will be available.
Oh, yeah.
Because if they want to go to Omaha, they'll be available because that's kind of the plan.
Right.
I love that. Well, you've heard from the head coach. Let's get to our second guest.
Okay, let's do that.
The
legend.
The one and only Craig Way, voice of the Longhorns. Here's Craig. Well, Duck, the hits keep on coming. We just had David Pierce.
Right. Now we get a bigger fish.
Now we get a broadcasting legend. Adding to the list of broadcasting legends we've had on Second Thought.
That's right.
How about Jim Nantz?
Brett Musburger.
Brad Sham,
Vern Lundquist,
Kirk Herbstreit,
yep, and now
Tom Doerr.
Hey,
that's our guy.
He's our
and
buddy.
Now we get Craig Way, the voice of the Longhorns. Craig, I know we're going to talk some baseball and the College World Series and all of that. We know your most iconic call is Vince Young dancing into the end zone. Frosty Rucker couldn't get there. Longhorns win the championship. We've always wanted to know, what's your second favorite call?
Well, the first thing I've got to say is, with that very impressive list of guests you've had, I'm glad to know I'm appropriately placed at the back of the line behind all of those, because that's where I belong. So I'm glad you put me there in the first place. It's a great question, Sid, I guess. I hadn't really thought about it much. Remember, and I know both of you guys will remember this, 3 years before that Rose Bowl, when Texas won the national championship at 02 under Augie Garrido.
Right.
I had a lot of people ask me about the whole light the tower orange thing.
Right.
And the actual truth of that call was that I didn't plan to say that, because I've always believed, certainly in my case, if you try to plan or rehearse something like that, I know I would blow it. I would mess it up. I wouldn't do it. So you have to let the moment just
right.
What it is. Well, I hadn't really thought about it, and I had a couple of people ask me, "What are you going to do?" I'm like, "I don't know." I hadn't thought about it, and if you'll remember, in that ninth inning against South Carolina,
mm-hmm,
the leadoff man got on base, and then Houston Street turned a quick 1-4-3 double play, and so all of a sudden there were two outs and
right,
nobody on, and it happened really quick.
Right,
and the next guy comes up. Well, Keith Moreland, of course, working with me, had gone down to the field to get ready for the post-use, and And I thought, oh my goodness. And it just hit me. What are you going to say here? And the only thing that came to mind was Keith telling me, and this will date Kirk a little bit, he'll remember this, 1975, when the team came back from Omaha afterwards, Keith always said he remembered seeing the tower lit orange.
Wow.
And that's what popped in my mind, because the next batter on the first pitch hit that ground ball to Ontiveros, and Jeff Ontiveros steps on the bag and it's over. So it happened so quickly. It was one of those reflexive actions to just say, light the tower orange. So, you know, I thought, okay, it had its nice place, and that was it. And so then when they get back here in 05, Tom Holliday, of course, was the coach in for Augie,
right,
and said to me at the team hotel before game two against Florida, hey, you are going to say light the tower orange if we win today. And I said, no, that had its place then. That was then. He goes, no, are you kidding me? I wasn't on staff for that note. You better say it.
He's making requests.
So that's why when that final out, when Jay Brent Cox got that strikeout to end it,
right,
that's why I said for the sixth time in school history you can light the tower orange, because I figured it when I was helping out Tom Holliday on that deal. So that's what that whole deal was all about. So I don't think about him said. It's kind of like let the incredulity of the moment hit you, and then whatever happens, happens. And that's the truth of it.
Man, I'm going to tell you, that brings back some memories. I love me some Doc Holliday.
Oh, yeah.
He was great.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just funny and just so inappropriate.
He was intense, away from
the field. He just always had us laughing.
And he was intense. Frank Anderson, intense pitching coaches, no question.
Yeah, think about this, guys. And I know you're well acquainted with the story, but I always remember Greg Davis telling me the story about how, you know, had it not worked out for Matt Holliday, he was coming on to school here as a scholarship quarterback.
Walk-on.
Had he not been on the Rockies 40-man roster there, he was going to come in and compete with D.Y. for the starting quarterback spot. Can you imagine what the dynamic would have been and how history might have been different had the Rockies not put him on the 40-man roster? They were out of options for him. And it just happened to work out that way. And, the rest, as they say, is history.
I'm going to tell you, Craig, I was at a practice one day, and, you know, Augie just let the reporters hang out in the dugout. He didn't care. You know, it was so loose over there. And Matt Holliday showed up one day with his bats, and he was launching them opposite field. It didn't matter. And I was looking around at guys that would eventually end up in the major leagues, the guys like Drew Stubbs and Taylor Teagarden, and they were, Sam LeCure, they were in awe. And then like 3 days later, I'm at another practice, and Brooks Kieschnick shows up. And he, they were even more impressed with him. They were like, man, we thought Holliday could bomb. And Brooks was not, you know, he was near the end at that time. You know, he wasn't exactly a guy. And Brooks Kieschnick got their attention even more than Matt Holliday did. It just goes to show you, man, college baseball is great, but that is the big boys, that is an entirely different level. And so I remember Stubbs looking at me going, do you see what he's doing with a wooden bat? I go, yeah, Drew, I'm watching it. It's just right here, yeah.
Baseball's version of the gun show, basically, is what that was. And said, I know you'll remember this, Kirk, you may remember it as well. '05, Matt was out with a broken hand. So he came to Omaha.
Right.
So he was there. He was there in the hotel and around the team and with the team during the run in 05. Well, in Omaha. I don't think he was in Oxford, but he was there in Omaha in 05. And so he was hanging out there. So that probably didn't hurt having that kind of influence around any. It probably didn't hurt any more than it certainly hadn't hurt this team to have Roger Clemens around the team. And I know when they struggled after the first two games in Manhattan and lost those two games to K-State, Roger had said to David Pierce, hey, I'm up here. If you ever need anything, just give me a holler. And David said, well, you know, guy's got Cy Youngs. Why not? And asked him to speak to the team, and he did. So, and Atwell, of course, was the weekend where we saw the emergence of Andy McGuire, starting with the Saturday game, or the Friday game, the middle of the three. So, you know, I would never underestimate the influence of someone who has those kinds of skins on the wall with guys like Matt Holliday and Roger Clemens.
Yeah, and they know what it takes to get to Omaha, as do you. I don't know, what trip is this going to be for you to the College World Series, Craig?
It'll be my 10th. It's 8th with the Longhorns. I also did twice was asked to do the national radio broadcast on Westwood One. So that was in 06 when Oregon State won its first national title, and in 2010 when South Carolina won the national championship. The last one at Rosenblatt. And then, of course, the next year the Longhorns got there in 11, so it was cool to get to call the last one at Rosenblatt, even if the Longhorns were not involved. And then the next year when the Longhorns were there during the first time they had it at TD Ameritrade. So it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, it's going to be a hoot. And Cedric and I were talking earlier in the podcast, Craig, about, you know, who might be the Cinderella? Who might the hometown Omahans rally behind? You know, they would have loved a Tennessee Tech, but we obviously prefer the Longhorns going. It looks like the Washington Huskies in their first trip are filling the Cinderella slippers. What do you think of all the times we've been there? Where do you think Texas, you know, they're the old regular 36 trips. You know, some of the players were talking this week, Craig, about, well, we know nobody likes us and that sort of thing, but they've always been Texas fans, haven't they, in Omaha?
Well, I think you guys will both remember this. They really were. I remember in 02 going up there, and in 03 and to a lesser extent 04, where Nebraska fans were saying, hey, if the Huskers can't win, I'm rooting for the Big 12, I'm rooting for Texas. The dynamic changed twofold. One was the misunderstanding in 04 at the end of the national championship,
right?
Because when Augie came back the next year, there was some booing and stuff like that.
Right.
I think that subsided. But mm-hmm. then when Nebraska left the Big 12,
yeah,
they tore their clothing on Texas. Texas was dead to them.
Right.
And I got that really strong vibe in 11 and in 14. I mean, they were booing. They were booing the team when they were coming out there in 11 and 14. So Texas is dead to them now, I think, unfortunately, for a lot of the diehard Nebraska Cornhusker fans.
Well, they've been kryptonite. They've been kryptonite for Nebraska.
Yes.
I mean, they just
can't
crushed them in football.
Can't
so,
beat them.
Yeah, you can understand
when
that.
When you go 9-1 against them in football, it changes the outlook as well. There's no doubt. That happened all during all Mac's watch. So, you know, that was a big part of it. And it'll be interesting to see if that dynamic has changed, because you know they're going to pay tribute to Augie up there.
Sure.
So that may change it a bit, and I hope it does. I'm kind of in agreement with you, Kirk. I think they're going to adopt Washington,
right,
for as long as they're around.
Right.
They've always liked Oregon State.
Oh, yeah.
So this year, that might be rooting for U.S. Steel, because I think they're the best team field still. Now that Florida's won a title, I don't know that they necessarily will be on board so much with the Gators. And Dave Van Horn, remember, was a former Nebraska coach. So they may root for him with the Razorbacks. I think they're kind of uneven about Texas Tech, because that's a Big 12 school,
mm-hmm.
You know, so, and Mississippi State's another SEC school, like, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how the rest of that goes. North Carolina may be one that they like a little bit. It's simply the Tar Heels have been close, but they've never won a national title.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you're as big Tar Heel guy as there is, right?
Well, when they're not playing Texas,
right.
I grew up in that state,
right,
and I did grow up for you know, certainly Carolina basketball and Carolina football and all that stuff. So I did. And Mike Fox has done a marvelous job there, and I've got a lot of friends back there, and I know all the Carolina broadcasters and stuff like that. I'm glad they're on the opposite side of the bracket.
Nice.
So I can root for them. I would love to see a Texas North Carolina national championship there.
That would be fun. And didn't you usually take your little yearly sabbatical? Don't you go out into the North Carolina,
Outer Banks, or somewhere,
and sit on a porch and sip whiskey.
Interesting you bring that up, Sid. I'm already, as we speak, altering vacation plans, because I was this particular year. I usually go at the very tail end of June, just in case, so it won't conflict with Omaha. For what it had to do, I think, with my mom and a couple of us. Well, we'll just move it up a week, and it probably won't conflict with things now. It could conflict a little bit, especially if the Longhorns win a game or two in Omaha, because I'm supposed to be in on the North Carolina coast by the 23rd of the month. But I'll gladly alter those plans and make adjustments as necessary if the stay is extended in Omaha.
So this Texas team, they're vulnerable. I mean, they're not a team of big boppers. Cody Clemens, I think, is the best player in the country, but after that, you know, they're hitting 272, which is the lowest of the eight teams. How do they compare with other Texas teams that you've covered? I know the ones I covered had like three or four guys that you had to look out for: a Stubbs, a Teagarden, a Seth Johnson, a Carson Kiner, guys like that. How does this particular team compare, and do you think there's any chance that they can get through the toughest bracket of the two and make a little bit of noise on the second weekend?
It's definitely the tougher bracket set. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I do think Oregon State might be the best team there, but on that other side, I would feel a lot more comfortable playing Mississippi State or Washington than I would certainly either Florida or Arkansas. And I think Tech is good enough swinging the bat to play with Carolina. Texas Tech's pitching has been wobbly of late, and I think that's why they may be a bit vulnerable as well. Even Colin Killian struggled the other day for the Red Raiders on that. As far as Texas goes, it is a different team. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you mentioned all those big bats they had, and Dustin Majewski with his booming home runs back there in the early 2000s. I mean, I'm still thinking about that one he hit to the very top there at Rosenblatt, right down that right field line, just inside the foul pole at the top of those bleachers. I remember that. And of course, remember even back the other way, the home run, the one that Cameron Rupp just crushed to dead center down by the barbecue smokers was something else in 2009 in the walk-off to beat Arizona State. Well, he hit the one that had, and then Connor Rowe hit the walk-off that barely made it over the left field fence. But it is different. It's a team. I will say this. This team seems to understand its roles about as well as any Texas team I've covered. They understand what their function is and who's to step up. They've been able to mask some difficulties down the stretch. Four guys, DJ Petrinski, Mason Hibbler, Tate and Ryan Reynolds, all were batting in the low 200s since May 1st. And fortunately, Reynolds stepped up in Game 3, and Shaw stepped up in Game 3. And then, of course, the other really interesting story, obviously, is Jake McKenzie. Here's a guy that going into the Sunday game in Lubbock, that decisive third game against Texas Tech, was batting 197. And his batting average has jumped more than 50 points. Without a home run, he's had, I think, four doubles, just a lot of singles. Mm-hmm. And he had two hits in that Sunday game against Tech. One was a big one. It was like in the eighth inning to get an insurance run. And Roger Wallace is down on the field talking to him at the game. And Roger asked him, hey, can you talk about, it's not been the biggest part of your game this season. You're there for your leadership and your glove. But, hey, you got two big hits. And his response, he just kind of looked at Roger and dryly said, well, I know they don't expect much out of me offensively, so I give them what I can. And it sounds like a guy graduated with a 3.95 in petroleum engineering, you know? But he's been a remarkable story. The fact that he played all nine positions, in one game was a special night to do that. And, it was really cool. So roles, guys have understood their roles. Hibbler, if they can get him going again hitting, he's been so big them wherever they've had him on the field, especially in left field of late, and you can't get Ryan Reynolds out of the lineup because you've got to have him at third base. Right. He's been remarkable at third base, but for the one throwing error against Indiana, he's just been tremendous, and fortunately it was good to see him hit the ball again. Roles. I think the guys have understood the roles, and I think that's happened with the bullpen as well. There's no two better stories on this team, few better in college baseball than Parker Joe Robinson and Andy McGuire. And what they've done in their roles has just been amazing at times to watch and to absorb.
Oh, you're definitely right about that. Do you miss Rosenblatt, and do you think TD Ameritrade is plays fairer now since they've flattened the seams on the baseball? And you can remember when, you know, Paul Bunyan couldn't get out of Ameritrade.
Oh, my goodness. When C.J. Hinojosa hit that home run in beat Irvine, the only run in a 1-0 elimination game. We were astounded, and I think it was the only home run hit in the ballpark that entire tournament until the national championship series between Vanderbilt and Virginia. And you're right, it was playing monstrously difficult. They knew the breezes could blow into the face of the hitters, mm-hmm. And the ballpark would play bigger, but they didn't realize how much.
Right.
And so it is a little more hitter friendly now. I do miss Rosenblatt, like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I miss you know, the shanties along tent that had the t-shirts. I miss a real Zestos, the reconstituted Zestos they put beyond right field across the street in that building. Doesn't even have the full menu. You can't get the full-on heavy-duty greasy cheeseburger.
Oh,
with everything
God, stop
you need
it,
on
it, stop
but,
it.
But plus the milkshake. You have to go out of town to the other Zestos. I do miss those games. But I will say this. The thing that's the magic about that tournament is the eight schools there and the way the city wraps its arms around it. Similar
Absolutely.
To what the Kansas City does with the Big 12 basketball tournament.
Right.
But on a larger scale, I think. And that's what makes that tournament unique. Yeah, Rosenblatt was great. This ballpark is not nearly as hitter-friendly, but it's much more fan-friendly. And it comes without the smell that you would get at Rosenblatt. Hard rain too, I might add.
No.
So you know, so I do miss it, but I think they've done a good job with it, and the ballpark has grown on people over time. I mean, this will be the ninth year that they've had
it.
Wow,
that's
already
amazing. One thing I can't let you go. Your prep work just amazes me when I listen to you, and you know, not just the high schools, but you know, I can't imagine the duration of the time you spend to prepare for is just truly remarkable, Craig. And I'm curious, you know, and I don't know if you can take shortcuts or not, because you know the state so darn well. You can name every high school in the state, but you know, for opponents,
every high school. How about every highway?
and every Dairy Queen and Whataburger. But could you give us a glimpse of your prep work, like before the World Series now, and what you go through?
Well, I think there are probably certain shortcuts, Kirk, and they're mainly from having done it enough where you can kind of cut to the chase and eliminate some time on the stuff that you really need to have and the things that help retain in your memory. And then you do that, and when you get your broadcast charts together, you have as much information on there as you can, and then obviously the game notes and things like that, and everything that we can do online helps a lot. But it's a lot of reading, and I'm a really avid reader, but when it comes to getting ready for a game, I'll put down the bio on Paul McCartney or the one I've been working on, Roberto Clemente, or something like that, and I have to zero in on reading the stuff to prepare for the next opponent. So there's a lot of late night reading. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it, and early morning work. Those are my two favorite times. And normally, late nights and early morning don't really jive well together. But when you're getting ready for a game, you have to make them work together. And so that's a lot of fun. So there's a lot of reading with it, but there are certain shortcuts digitally that can help you get to what you have where you're cutting down some of your hard research time by, say, an hour or so, but an hour or two. But if I'm putting for a football, I'm putting in just in the game preparation things, there's probably a good 4 to 5 hours just in game prep charts on each team. And with Texas, you know them pretty well, but there's numbers to crunch as well and things to put in. And it might be a little bit less than baseball when you've been around a team as long as you've been with them during the course of the season. But there's, you know, it's reading and homework. It's what I try to preach to my kids is reading and homework. Make sure you're taking care of it. It's what we all do. I get research and stuff and the work that you guys put in researching a column. There's a lot of legwork involved, and I think that's just what it comes down to, a lot of reading.
Yeah, homework never stops, and Lauren, fans are blessed to have you on the mic, and we appreciate you coming on with us. And
listenership, you're not worthy. You just got 25 minutes with Craig Way.
I know.
Craig, man, we appreciate it so much. Look forward to hearing the call on 104.9 The Horn. And if you're listening online, will that Texas Sports Dash audio still be available too, Craig?
Yeah, TexasSports.com, and also on the TuneIn app. Our broadcast will be available from up there. So if people got that on the or whatever the TuneIn thing, they can hear it on there as well. I know we don't have Mr. C's in Omaha anymore, but we can find some place to go have a decent meal, right?
Hey, go to Oscar's. They got the best blackened wings in the world. I love Oscar's. If you haven't been, Craig, you got to get there.
I'll hit that. I'll hit La Solomio.
There you go.
And Leavenworth Cafe for breakfast.
There you go.
Man,
I like it.
Sounds good. Well, Craig, man, have a good couple weeks in Omaha, and we will holler at you. I know the Duck will see you up there. I'll catch up with you when you get back, brother.
Sounds good, boys.
Take care.
Take care, man.
Bye, Craig.
Hey, thanks. You bet.
How about Craig Way and David Pierce, back-to-back, wonderful, wonderful podcast, sir.
Yeah, that was fun. Or as Jake McKenzie told us this week, Davey P.
Davey P. I love it. But man, that'll do it for episode 102 of On Second Thought. We're going to take off next week because Kirk will be in Omaha and I will be on vacation. But we will come back and we will review what went down at the College World Series.
Plenty of good things to report.
And plenty of other good things in the sports world. For the Duck, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.
Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back-to-school shopping done now at Amazon.com/back-to-school and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.